Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Come visit and say hello. And one of the great things we love about darting across Connecticut is we get to learn about the history of the towns that we visit. And, you know, obviously so many places in Connecticut are steeped in history. And it seems along this river, especially, there's a lot of history. And we're glad to bring in Bob McDougall, who is the museum director with the Portland Historical Society. Is that the proper way to say it? Because, you know, as you told me before, when someone, there was a bequest of a home, that the Historical Society predates the museum. Is that the way to put it?
Correct.
So I have so many questions. I guess, you know, let's start generally. Like, what if no one, if people know nothing about Portland, what would be the first thing you would talk about?
Well, the first thing we learn here in town about Portland comes in our third grade curriculum. It's where it's located, and we're in the big bend of the Connecticut River. So on a map, if all you have are the geographic...
You can find it.
Yep. You just look for the big bend in the river, and that's where Portland is.
You know, I did, you know, in just looking into the town, there are two things that pop out. You know, it again, it's not like a Wethersfield, Windsor, 1633. It was part of Middletown and then sort of branched out, but you see quarries and you see shipbuilding. And I want to start with the stone. Like, how do you know, was it the Native Americans who knew that was here? Like, how did the settlers find out that there's this rich deposit of brownstone?
Well, that comes back to being right next to the river. That's how they first arrived here, was coming up the river, and there were these cliffs overhanging the river of stone. The neat thing about brownstone is it's sedimentary, so it's in layers, so it breaks off in building block shapes. So they're coming up the river, and they see these building blocks on the shore. And so they pulled over and decided to see what they could do with it.
And, I mean, this brownstone was used, like, tell me, like, because I think of brownstone, I just think of, oh, so-and-so bought a three-story brownstone on Marlborough Street in Boston or what have you.
Well, our first settler in 1692 was James Stancliffe. In his profession, he was a stone cutter, but he did headstones. That was the big demand for stone in the very early days.
A lot of people were dying.
There are a lot of cemeteries filled with brownstone headstones.
Yeah.
You'll see that, too. Then eventually they moved into, again, they were using the freestone, they called it freestone. We have a street in Portland here called Freestone Avenue, and it was named because the stone was free from the ground, not so that it was free from cost. Because even in the earliest deeds of the town, there was a couple cent per ton charge for using the stone.
Huh.
So they realized it had value and attached that to it right away.
I mean, they didn't have to, like, drill and stuff. It was loose and they could just pull it out.
Yeah, because of the New England climate with the frost heaves, it broke the stone up. As the water would get into the cracks, it would expand and break it out. So, like I said, it was almost like building blocks.
And it's funny because, you know, I went to Amherst College, which is a rival of Wesleyan, and you see all the NESCAC, the New England Small College, you know, schools like your Bowdoin, Colby's. It's a lot of brick-based architecture, but Wesleyan is brownstone, and that's because of Middletown's proximity to the Portland quarries, right?
Right. We used to be part of Middletown, and when the quarry owners and the economic engine on this side of the river got big enough and we wanted to separate, they said, okay, you can have your own town, but we want to reserve enough stone to build a university over here. So there was actually a deal brokered to retain use of that stone to finish that project.
So we're talking with Bob McDougall, who's the museum director with the Portland Historical Society here on Bryan & Company. So the first settler, you said, was the late
1692.
Okay. And then who came here? Like, who settled here?
Again, primarily were the English, most of them from Middletown. Originally, Portland was just grazing ground for the Middletown people. Again, there was no bridge, so they'd ferry their cattle across. There were Indians already here.
Hmm.
We have Indian Hill Avenue up near the Gildersleeve section where the shipyards are. And there was actually a formal Indian reservation on the north end of the town.
When did they build a bridge?
There were two bridges. The first one was 1895. That was the first highway bridge. The first railroad bridge.
So that's like 100 years after settling.
The first railroad bridge came 10 years before that. So 1865, no, 1885 was the railroad. 1895 was the first highway bridge, which was a low bridge at the same level as the railroad bridge that got taken out by the flood. Then 1938, they put in the Aragone Bridge, which is much higher.
Right. And before that, they were still ferrying across. So in the late 1800s, they were still ferrying across.
Right.
Wow, that's really I hadn't thought about that. Quickly tell me about the shipbuilding history here, because this goes back to the Revolutionary War, right?
Yeah, and before. Again, because we're on the river, that's how everybody got here. Nobody came in on the highway. So because of our proximity to the river, and there's a lot of very low land up in the Gildersleeve section of town, it was easy to build large boats and slide them into the water there. There were 8 or 9 shipyards all established in that area. Eventually, a gentleman named Sylvester Gildersleeve started buying up the shipyards and eventually formed Gildersleeve and Company Shipbuilding, and they built over 200 ships in the 100 years that they were in business.
Now, tell me, your backstory is phenomenal, because you've been involved with the Historical Society since, I won't even say well before you could drive, you weren't even in middle school. Right? I mean, talk about your connection to this whole thing.
I was born and raised in Portland. And when I was in fifth grade, my mom used to read highlights out of the newspaper and said, oh, there's going to be a meeting of people who want to form a historical society. I said, oh, it sounded interesting. I was just in fifth grade. My dad said, oh, you want to go? So we went down to the building right across the street here, the old Buck Library. And we went to the first formative meeting back in 1973, and we paid our dues that night and became charter members, and I've been involved more or less ever since.
It's incredible. You know, where we are at Melilly's, and people should come down and say hello and get some coffee and say hello. They call it an arch, those
right.
things that pull the stone out. They were led by oxen. They're huge.
Right.
They're really, really big, and I had no idea, and it's cool that got restored. And I'm also curious, is there anything you know about the bank building? Because I know it's like for sale. It's like an old bank, but there's no real history to that. It's just an old bank.
It was originally Freestone Savings Bank, I believe. The real history is at the Liberty Bank just farther down. It's the Joseph Hall House, and it's completely a brownstone building. One of the neat features of Portland when you come into town, if you notice on the left side of the street where we're sitting, there are a lot of smaller merchant-type buildings on the other side of the street.
There's like bigger stone. Yeah.
On the other side of the street are all the large properties, which were the quarry owners, the shipbuilding owners. So you had the whole economy. You had your workers on one side of the street, and you had your upper class
so
on the other side of the street.
The grander buildings are on that side.
Yep. There are still tenement houses here that the quarry workers lived in. And
just real quick, we only have a few seconds. Yep. We're talking with Bob McDougall, the museum director with the Portland Historical Society. What do you love about Portland?
The diversity of the history. There are so many different aspects. There are three basic legs to the economy. There was the brownstone quarries, there was the shipbuilding, and then there was agriculture. We had a huge shade-grown tobacco industry here. Most of my generation worked the tobacco fields in high school. That was the big employer.
With the machetes and the hacking, the harvest is hard work.
Yeah, well, shade-grown's a little bit different because they don't take the whole plant out at once. They start at the bottom as the leaves get big, and they take those off, and then they go around week after week working up the plant, taking just the leaves off. Shade-grown tobacco is the wrapper tobacco for cigars.
Got it.
Where the broadleaf tobacco that's grown without the nets is the filler tobacco that goes inside the cigar.
There you go. It's great to meet you, Bob. Just to get the history, I love it. So thank you so much for your time and coming down here so early. Bob McDougall. And again, where is the museum?
We're at 492 Main Street, and we've just celebrated our 20th anniversary as a museum, our 50th anniversary as a historical society, and I'd like to congratulate WTIC on their 100th anniversary of broadcasting.
Thank you. When are you open, by the way?
We're all volunteer-driven. We're currently open one Sunday a month. Our schedule's been a little erratic with the summer, but there's a local newspaper, River East News Bulletin, and that's where we post our hours. So keep an eye there, and you'll see when we have special events.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.